It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We're going to get you ready for the Mountain Lion upgrade due any minute now, show you some great apps and a lot more. We've got a fantastic Mac Break Weekly coming from Boston, Greece, and Northern California. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 309, recorded July 24th, 2012. It's not even good leather. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone from your home or office. Find out what your gadget's worth at gazelle.com. And by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website or blog. Plus, more than 50 new features, including mobile-responsive designs with automatic device scaling. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak7. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers the latest Apple news. In this case, the latest Apple rumors. That's pretty much all we've got. And we have a great panel. I don't know where. I'll tell you what. I'll begin to my left and we'll work our way around. Starting with Andy Iannocco of the Chicago Sun-Times, a regular here, thank goodness. His hat has fallen off.
No, see, the reason why I almost always wear a hat is because Tuesday mornings are incredibly busy, so it's rare that I've had a chance to, like, fully, like, shampoo and wash my hair in the morning. Fortunately today, a freak electrical thunderstorm woke me up at 5:30.
Oh, God.
And so I've been so tired all day today that the only way to keep awake and to keep cool in this 92-degree weather is to shower roughly every 2 hours. So this hair has been prelled and conditioned twice already today.
Well, you look great. In fact, I think a lot of people think you wear the hat because you have no hair, but no. You have a nice bouffant going there.
No, although a side effect of the hat when I was 18 or 19, realizing that, gee, I like this hat. I like wearing this hat. But if I keep wearing this hat, no one will ever know.
Andy has hair. And we have a show title. Great to have you once again, Andy. Also here, and this shocks me because we did not expect this. We actually thought we were going to Skype Mr. Alex Lindsay, back from Australia.
It's good to be back.
Was it down under?
It was great. It was good. This is my first time in Australia. And so I was in Sydney and Melbourne.
The nicest people in the world.
Oh, it was just great.
They're friendly. They're warm. They love to party.
I didn't party too much, but we did have a lot of beer. There was a lot of beer drinking.
A lot of beer.
Mixed drinks are not as popular, but the beer was very popular and it was very good.
You had a little mini meetup. What's this? What are all these?
This is my life.
You need all of these?
This is my life. This is what I carry around. Someone was asking about this, so I thought I'd bring and show it to you.
This is, I can tell you, this is England.
Okay, that's
the UK.
That's UK.
This one is Korea?
No, that's Australia.
Australia has the tilted dual prong. We're looking at plug adapters. That one is either France or Korea. It depends. Yeah. There's a slight width difference between France and Korea.
That one's France.
Okay.
And then this is...
These are the plugs you need. And the good old US of A. These are all just adapters for your Mac.
Just a little note that you can use these with it. You don't have to go out and buy like a transformer.
You know what? I love it. Apple sells this travel kit with all of these.
Yeah.
And you slot it into the big, the big... thing in the middle of your power cord, and look, he's got Australia on there, and it's great. You just plug it into the wall, and it does the voltage handles voltage no problem.
All of these adapters use these handle
110 to 240, no problem.
Yeah. So anyway, but Australia was great,
50 and 60 hertz.
It's funny, the people in Melbourne were telling. Of course, the people in Sydney said that the people in Sydney were the nicest, and the people in Melbourne said that they were the nicest.
They're all pretty darn nice.
They're all pretty darn nice.
It's really so
it's fantastic.
But they're each equally drunk, and that's all that's important.
It was just, both cities are just stunning. I mean, we were had a good chance to hang out with Mike Seymour, who has FX PhD, and just had a great time on the Bay.
How long are you back for now?
A couple days.
And then you take your you finally got your MacBook Retina. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, I got to introduce our far-flung correspondent, from the Peloponnesus in Greece, Mike Elgin.
That's right.
It's the peripatetic, Mike Elgin. It's the sun is going down. Are you outside at a cafe?
I am indeed. I'm in the town of Sparti, which is a tiny little town in the center of Laconia and the Peloponnese in Greece. I'm at an outdoor cafe with about 3,000 Greeks. And yeah, it's about 9:20 p.m. tomorrow. Or no, today. Still today.
We've been watching the sunset when we first started, and we had to do some Skype finagling. It was the sun was still up, and now it's getting darker. It's beautiful. This is not vacation for you. This
and
is your life.
Will be up until the sun comes up again.
This is not a vacation.
That's right. I went full time digital nomad. That's right.
Do you have kids?
And it's like
they're grown.
I have grown kids, and so they're on their own. So you know, hopefully they'll survive. But no, it's great. My wife and I have been wanting to do this for 3-4 years, and then catastrophically, she went and got a big job. So that kind of sucked, and now she's left the job, and we're, you know, pursuing our dream of living wherever.
That is so great. And because you're a writer, you can file from anywhere, and I presume nowadays, because of the internet, you can follow stories anywhere. You could be anywhere.
Absolutely. And in fact, I have more time to do it because I don't have a house to deal with. I don't have a commute taking up an hour or two of my day every day. So it's actually there are huge advantages to doing this from a career point of view.
Wow.
The other thing I'm really looking forward to is I normally don't attend the European conferences like the wireless conference in Barcelona and CBIT and so on. I've been to CBIT a couple of times, but normally I don't go. And now I'm just going to go to all the European conferences, and you know I'll be back in the U.S. for the major U.S. conferences as well. But yeah, so far it's just been fantastic.
Oh, it's just great. So from now on, I guess Mike will be joining us from somewhere new and different.
From somewhere, yeah.
Well, it won't always be Greece.
No. After we'll be here for about 3 months probably, and then we're probably going to go. We may go to Nairobi, Kenya next. But we don't know yet. We haven't decided.
God, I'm so jealous.
Hey, we have a house in Rwanda if you want to visit. Same.
You want to go to Rwanda? Alex is inviting you.
That is cool.
I've heard a lot of things about. Yeah, absolutely.
This has become very global. Alex offered Andy your apartment, the Pixel Core apartment in London. Now you're offering him your house in Rwanda.
We do have a place in London as well, so. And I was researching. I was researching places in Sydney when I was there.
No,
when I was in Sydney, I was like, I need to have an apartment.
Well, you know, Trey Ratcliffe moved to, for believe it or not, Queenstown, which is.
I know. I was really tempted to tell him I was in. I was going to try to go.
Yeah.
I was like, New Zealand's very close. Trey. Now that I'm here, it was just too busy. I wanted to go visit, but I think I'm going to go back to Australia soon. So.
All right, let's get to the Mac news because there's some. I guess we're waiting. We had thought that tomorrow would be the day Mountain Lion would come out. Today, after the show, of course, Apple will have its quarterly.
I find it very interesting that Apple is releasing it like right after the show.
Yeah, they do that every year. They have when the stock market closes right after the show.
Right, that's when
you know, it's Microsoft did the same thing to Windows Weekly last week. We just kept the show going until we got the quarterly results. I don't think there's any reason to. I think we know what Apple's going to say. We made a bucket load of money. We sold a crap ton of devices.
Turns out that the iPhone is a success.
And now I guess sales are slowing a little bit from some reports from analysts. The sales are slowing as people wait for the iPhone 5, but that's always what happens.
Well, and they're saying, the analysts are also saying that iPhone 5 they think is going to sell, is it 40 million? Is that right?
It's really interesting that the analysts seem to be converging on this idea that the iPhone 5 is going to be the most successful iPhone ever.
Right.
I'm not sure why. I guess pent-up demand, people who had iPhone 4s skipped the iPhone 4S because it was a two-year.
Well, isn't this the first, you know, full jump up where all the carriers are involved? So I think that's the other thing is that you know,
right.
They were
AT&T,
all coming out in pieces.
Verizon and Sprint are all going to have new ones.
And Global, yeah.
And
you
Cricket.
Know, and there's, yeah. you know, so the thing is it's the first time they're able to launch worldwide all at one time with a big update. You know, the 4S was, the half update.
So, Mike Elgin, your prediction, how big will the crap ton be?
And I think there's a lot of, Well, first of all, I think that the other thing is a lot of people are ready to upgrade their phones. You know, they've done their time. You know, they've done 2 years. A lot of people have had an iPhone for quite a while, and I think the iPad and the iPhone and and the I hate to say it, but the death of Steve Jobs and so on has sort of focused a lot of attention on Apple these days. And I just think it's going to be the most massive. I mean, you remember all the disappointment with the iPhone 4S that it wasn't the 5. Everybody wants the next big jump. And when they provide it, it's going to be ridiculous. The other thing I think they're going to surprise us with is information about China. I think their quiet, so-called quiet release of the iPad in China is going to be turned out to be a lot bigger than anybody thinks.
How about you, Andy? You agree?
Yeah, it really is. The Apple's really put all the pieces into place that they need for the operating systems and the hardware. So now it really is about making sure that if there's anybody on this planet with money or round stone coins in their hands to exchange for an Apple product, that Apple can get an Apple product in that person's hands. Their aggressive move into China, it's just not even a matter of debate. I mean, they really, really want that market, and they're really all set to do a really good launch there. So I think we're going to see some good numbers from there. I think I should do a preemptive strike. Every time that we mention either a 7-inch iPad or an iPhone 5, we get lots of tweets and emails from people saying it's not the iPhone 5. Stop calling it the iPhone 5. I do believe that maybe this is the iPhone 4S is the last time that Apple actually puts a number next to a phone. But realize, people, that these are pretend products. These are imaginary products.
We don't know if anything's coming out.
They fly, and they're made out of graham cracker crust at this point in our minds. So we can call it whatever we want. I do think that the next iPhone, for lack of a better word, is going to be a lot bigger, because if rumors are true to form that this is finally the iPhone with the larger screen, people don't like to have to sit in for a technical description of why this phone that looks just like last year's phone is actually much better on the inside than the model that preceded it, when you can show them this has a bigger screen. Sold! Like, but I didn't tell you about the new CPU.
Sold!
Like, shut up and take my money, as the meme goes.
By the way, the full name is the putative iPhone 5, but we ask you to impute the putative whenever you hear it. Otherwise, we sound like idiots. So the new iPhone, we could say that safely.
Le iPhone neuf.
Nouvelle iPhone.
And I'm hoping that someone at Apple listens, because I think that packing the iPhone in graham cracker dust would be...
That's not a bad idea.
It would be fantastic. It would give you a little... It would keep it protected, and then there'd be like a little snack at the end. You know, I think... it's a lot of work to get those boxes open.
Apple will probably put another magic dot inside and say, oh, I'm sorry, we would swap this out for you, but this dot says that this has been packed. This has been washed in graham cracker dust. We don't support that.
I suppose if this were a serious news program, we would have you now all predict what Apple's earnings will be later in the day, blah, blah, blah. Screw that. I want to know, is Apple going to announce, as they did last time, that tomorrow Matt and Line will be available? You know, last time, a year ago,
I thought we already knew that
tomorrow Line will be. We don't know anything.
Oh, okay. I thought the 25th was the date.
Nobody has said that. They said in July.
Okay.
Hasn't been announced, but I have seen lots of indicators outside of the ones that have been made public that tomorrow's the day. I'll be very surprised. Yeah. I'm the reason why I'm so bummed that I got jolted out of bed at 5:30 this morning is that I'm not very sure that I need to finish my review today if it's going to be in the paper tomorrow.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm sorry. When I say on the Sun-Times website, because if I were to file it today and it were printed tomorrow and I was wrong, I'd be in big trouble.
Right. You have to wait. You have to wait for that one. And apparently, according to 9 to 5 Mac, Mountain Lion has been ceded to AppleCare reps, which you would expect, in coordination with AppleCare operations. This is a email. It'd be pretty good to fake this. I think this is probably the real thing. This email is provided to AHAs, that's the AppleCare reps, in advance of Mountain Lion's official release. Copy the code below into the Redeem section of the Mac App Store. On the Mac you wish to upgrade to Mountain Lion, your download will begin automatically. We do know that the ready-to-manufacture came out, the Gold Master. I mean, there's no reason not to think it'll be coming out tomorrow. So, let me ask this esteemed panel. First of all, you're in the Peloponnesus, Art. Can you get it, Mike Elgin?
Well, I'm going to find out. I mean, I haven't tried yet, but I would imagine I would. I mean, I don't see why I wouldn't, but I should try that. In fact, I'll do it during the show.
Yeah, because it's going to be tomorrow in a few hours. You should get it before we do.
Well, you know, but I have the one laptop, so
Oh, that's a brave thing.
Alex, you have contacts in Australia. They're as far as anybody can get.
Yeah.
I think
what's
going to
happen
in Australia right now.
Yeah, what's going to happen is they'll do the call at right after the stock market closes, about 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. And they'll announce it at that call, on the call, and then the code will start to push to the App Store probably almost immediately for New Zealand.
Because I don't think they want to have a conversation. I think part of it is that I would doubt they want to have any conversation
about it.
Right. They just want that to. Right.
Yeah. So that's when the flag goes up, and that will be probably in the morning in Australia. People get up and say, "Good day, mate. I'm a mountain lion." Anything we should be doing to prepare right now? First of all, should Mike Elgin be doing it on his one and only laptop?
And his one and only connection. I don't know. Unless he has a really good connection.
Very tempting.
Yeah, I vote no. This is one of the most based on reports that have been published. This is and also on public statements that Apple has already made about Mountain Lion. This is a big update with lots of critical fundamental changes to it. And so personally, I do have a second Mac that's set aside for this, but my primary Mac is not going to be getting 10.8 for another couple of weeks. One of the problems is going to be just the simple idea of iCloud, how well this syncing service works when it goes live to millions and millions and millions of people. Furthermore, it's going to be on an app by app basis that once the iWork apps get updated, once your favorite personal organizer gets updated, third party, has the developer sussed out every different circumstance between your iPhone, your iPad, and your desktop to make sure that that iCloud can sync them all together correctly? Because we've talked about this before in the show. The huge source of pain amongst developers I've been talking to over the past year has been making sure that iCloud syncing works in everything except for the most idealized circumstances. Everybody has a story to tell me about the time that they absolutely nuclear-fied every single test document that they had on every single device because of a simple little error that they made in figuring out what would iCloud do if I threw it this slight curveball. And then, you know, as of 9 months ago, at least, iCloud had an absolute grand mal seizure and decided, what if we just were to make sure that none of these documents could be opened by anybody anywhere under any circumstance? Let's try that and see if that works. No, iCloud, don't do that. That's not what we're paying you to do. So, yeah, it's going to take me a couple of weeks before I trust it.
Now, if you are using Leopard, what do you do?
Leopard?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Leopard. That was before Snow Leopard?
Yeah.
Which was
before
Lion?
That was a long time ago.
Lion.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, if you're or Leopard or earlier where you don't have an app store, you can't get it, right? What do you do? Walk into the Apple store and say, upgrade me? How do you get it?
I think you can still get Lion on media. I don't know for a fact, but I would be pretty certain that there's going to be every machine that can run 10.8 will be able to run 10.8. So I'm sure that they've thought about that. There's a serious double digit percentage of Macs out there that are still running 10.4, 10.5,
and most of those, by the way, won't be able to run Mountain Lion. I mean, there's a big compatibility issue.
Yeah.
With those, right? RoaringApps.com has a table of compatibility for applications, which you should pay attention to. And then, of course, by the way, there's a lot of X's like...
typically when these come out, if you're doing mission critical work, I would really watch and see how things
I'd
turn
be
out.
Very
if you have
careful.
Two computers, yeah. Like I'm gonna have another computer that I install it on so that I can get used to it and test it and check it out, but I'm not going to put it on this machine.
So check the Roaring Apps list for your app compatibilities, because that's huge. And then there's quite a few Mac models that are not compatible. In fact, I wonder if my question is moot. Would there be any Leopard running Macs on this list? We're talking the specific models that are compatible with Mountain Lion.
I think the late 2008 was still
late Leopard. 2008 MacBook.
Because wasn't Snow Leopard 2009?
Okay, maybe. MacBook Pro, mid to late 2007. Those for sure could be running Leopard.
Yeah.
MacBook Airs, late 2008 or newer. Those could be running Leopard. iMac, mid 2007 or newer. Mac Mini, 2009 or newer. Mac Pro, early 2008 or newer. Xserve, 2009 or newer. Well, there's no newer. XServe 2009. and then there is a compatibility. This is for the apps. Presumably, this is a great article, by the way, a Cult of Mac, Alex Heath writing it. This is one of the places Mike also writes for getting your Mac ready for Mountain Lion the right way. And so check the requirements, check the compatibility on apps at roaringapps.com. Back it up. I'm not sure I would use, you know what, I would not use Time Machine for this one. I would probably use Super Duper for this one. Yeah. And make a bootable backup and put it on an external drive and keep, and then that way, if the thing goes to hell, you can boot up your external from your external drive.
I've never really taken to Time Machine. It's kind of,
If your machine is screwed, restoring from Time Machine is not even going to be an option.
Yeah. I believe we use Carbon. I have to ask the guys, but I think we're still using Carbon Copy for that. And it's
similar.
Yeah. And it just clones it out. And yeah, any one of those. But
now, Andy, we know you can't talk about Mountain Lion. So I'm going to have to phrase this in a way that he could talk about it. I'm just curious, if you or someone like you were to have installed a Mountain Lion on a machine, if one would do a clean install or one would be okay, I'm just tying myself in knots here, to try a upgrade on top of the existing Mountain Lion if one were in fact trying to do
this is just general tips and tricks. I mean, I am a firm believer that even before there was this one click really cool system level installs, I've been a firm believer that once every year and a half or 2 years, you really should just nuke it all from orbit, do a fresh clean install. When my laptop is half during its service life, about a year and a half, 2 years in, I will actually make sure that I have a complete backup, then actually reformat the whole hard drive and reinstall fresh copies of all my software. The rule is, though, that I only reinstall apps as I need them, because that's the only way to make sure that after a year and a half, there's so many documents and so many files and things on and apps that you don't actually need. You used it once a year ago, and I'm always shocked that I'll have another 90 to 100 gigabytes left on this 500 gigabyte hard drive by doing that clean install. But it's not as necessary as it once was, because you can do a really good, Apple really has and re-engineered the upgrade process to make it only marginally more complicated than updating an app. So you can just go into the App Store, click on make the purchase, click a button, if this works the way the previous updates have worked, by the way, and just walk away for a surprisingly short amount of time and come back to a working install of 10.8. So I wouldn't say that it's absolutely necessary to do. Realize that a clean install and the sort of things that I'm advocating can often take like hours and hours and hours, if not the whole day. So not necessary, but definitely recommended, especially if you're installing this on an older machine, something you've had running for a couple of years.
I strongly suggest every time I move to a new operating system, that generally means, unless it's like brand new, like
you got a brand new Retina, what are you going to do with that one?
I'm going to leave it the way it is for now, probably for the next 3 months.
You're not going to put Mountain Lion on it.
No. I have to do work on this.
I'm going to do it right away. I'm going to do it as soon as it's available. I'm going to do it this afternoon.
Well, and things, I deal with a lot of stuff like Skype.
On all my machines.
Yeah, exactly.
I am. I'm serious.
You're crazy.
I don't care.
I know. I do.
If one goes bad, so what?
Things that use the CPU and especially the inputs and outputs like Thunderbolt and stuff like that, that stuff tends to be a little bit more sensitive. So whether it's Hangouts or Skype or other things like that, those things tend to be a little bit more sensitive to upgrades and compatibility
issues.
Well, I know. But I do.
I'm a rebel.
I do.
I'm going to do it. And I bet you 99% of the people watching this show are going to do it even though they know it's the wrong thing to do. They're going to do it anyway.
You're all crazy.
How about in the audience? You're all going to just, as soon as Mountain Lion's available, boom!
Here's to the crazy one.
Yeah. You know what they say.
They're all looking at me like, you're wrong.
You know what they say. It's if you're one step ahead, you're a leader. If you're two steps ahead, you're a martyr.
Here's one thing that is really... I don't know how many steps ahead I am.
installing one the day of the other. Least is two.
So here's one thing that's really handy to know. If you are running Lion, I guess this would be true of any system that's capable of Lion. There's a Lion internet recovery that you can use. So even if you mung everything, first of all, always back up your data.
Yeah.
But any other pieces that you didn't get, that you didn't make yourself, that are one of a kind, one-off stuff, you got to back up. But if you really mung it up, you can restart your machine with a command R, right?
Well, there's a recovery partition that can boot up the machine. You won't. That's not the same as recovering your entire boot partition. Recovering your entire directory.
But then there's this cool thing that you can restore it from Apple's servers.
You can restore the operating system install from online, because the recovery partition will let you boot locally. You can even boot slightly off of a network if you need to do that. It really is designed to make sure that you're not left high and dry, particularly right. if you're using a MacBook Air or something that doesn't have internally the ability to just stick in a CD. You might not even have your USB recovery chip with you. And so that's really what's designed to cover. It really is, though, like an emergency ejection seat. You don't want to have to use that unless the alternative is guaranteed fireball death.
Why? So why not? I mean, I'm getting a clean install from Apple servers. I have backed up my data. Remember, I stipulated that.
It's much better to have made a local backup on a hard drive and be able to perform that restore locally rather than try to use these emergency services to resuscitate your Mac, because that's kind of what this service is designed to do. It's a resuscitation
tool.
Plus,
if everybody's doing it tomorrow, you don't want to be the one that's waiting for the service.
Yeah, so many things can go wrong when you do an operating system level update. Just a couple days ago, I earned a free loaf of zucchini bread from a neighbor because they were trying to install an Apple update, and it went to blue screen like over and over and over again.
Ooh.
And it was one of those things where if you have another drive standing by because you did a backup before you did something that serious, worst case scenario is you go out, you see the Batman movie, you come back and everything's fixed because you did a restore. If you don't have that backup, you'll still get everything back, but now you're dealing with like a hands-on process or a trip to the mall to visit your Apple store.
So our advice to you then would be bake some zucchini bread now.
Get my email address.
And get Andy's email address just in case.
I will say that those of you who have Amazon.com, who have Amazon Prime, you can get a full capacity backup hard drive to cover your existing hard drive. It will cost you $3.99, $2.99 for next day delivery. Order it today. It'll arrive tomorrow. Download a free copy of Super Duper, which you can just do a one click backup.
That's a great thing to have. If you have an external drive, or even a USB key, because how big is it? I mean, how big is your hard drive? I guess it might be too big to do that.
Probably bigger than USB key. But I mean, the fact is that these external pocket size hard drives are just so damn cheap. If AOL were still an ongoing concern, they would ship like half terabyte hard drives, USB 2.0, to every doorstep with the AOL logo on it now. So I mean, it really is worth like the $50 or $60 or $70 it'll cost to get one of these external drives to just once a week or so put it on your schedule. Remember like this: every time you brush your teeth, do a full backup using Super Duper, and you'll be fine.
I just rebooted my 11-inch Air. This is the older Air, and restarted it and held down Command and R, and this is what boots up. Now this is from the local recovery. Can you see that? You can't chat, unfortunately. I don't know why. Maybe I could wait. Stay there. I could drag that over. You're on the second screen, but that's what you get. You get utilities, and you can restore from a. Now, if this gets munged up, that reinstall option is coming from your hard drive. There is this kind of emergency that you can get it from Apple servers.
Yeah. And this really is one of the things that in an ideal world, 10.8 will be just legions ahead of 10.7 and 10.6 in Windows, because in an idealized world, like let's say this time next year, after all the problems have been worked out, you will have purchased all of your software through the App Store.
Yes.
So that's safely off. That's safely offsite.
That's the beauty.
All of your documents are being synced through iCloud, so they're safely offsite. So again, in a perfect world, if all this works a year from now, you will get that dream situation where even if you're having a tea on the porch and using your MacBook Air and a team of badgers wrests your MacBook Air and takes it into its den and does dirty business on it, you don't want to put back anymore. You'll be able to buy a brand new MacBook Air, take it back, click a couple buttons, sign in, and get back every single get back your 10.8 install, get back all of your apps, get it back all your data, get back all your settings. Right now it's not going to work quite that way, but in an idealized iCloud future, that's the whole idea, to have sort of a Chromebook on a Chromebook only, where you actually have possession of your files, and Apple is just simply quietly making sure that there's a copy of it someplace else automatically.
Now, the reason I said don't do it from Time Machine is in case of this worst case example. Yeah.
Time Machine is great for rolling back documents. It's great for put this back to the status it was in 2 days ago. When it comes to doing a full restore, it can certainly do that, but an app like SuperDuper is optimized for backup the whole thing, restore the whole thing, and do an incremental backup and do an incremental restore. It's much, much better than Time Machine.
I got to say, I got this machine right before I left for Australia. And I mean, literally, I was only home for like 36 hours. And so I came in, opened up the machine.
Isn't that nice?
Opened up
the App Store.
I just went, and I didn't hit all of them because there's some of them I found I'm not using, but I just went down and just went like this. And then I went back to packing and doing other things, hanging out with my kids, whatever. Came back. It's already
really
nice.
Then I've been using, I mean, yes, eventually iCloud will solve this, but you could use Dropbox or Carbonite or some other solution for your data that makes it just as easy to do that. Hey, Chad, could you show my screen again? I can't get out of this because only you can see. Okay, would you zoom in on that? I don't know what it's saying now.
Cancel.
Are you sure you want to quit? Yeah, restart. Okay, where's my mouse?
I think you just hit return.
Is it return? Okay, thank you. You saved me. I couldn't see it. I'd moved it off screen. Now I'm rebooting, and I did not erase anything, so I'm just going to come back the way it was. Gosh, I hope so. Anyway, we're very excited. We talked last week, and I hope you saw that. If not, go back and watch about the main new features in Mountain Lion. They're fairly significant. This is not a minor upgrade, despite the naming, which implies minor upgrade.
It's a great update.
I think it's going to be a good update, and I think you're going to want to put it on your Retina before anybody does. Because it's got Retina specific stuff.
No, but I need to test some things first. I know it does. It's supposed to fix the resolution issues and all the other stuff. But I have to
tell you what. I'll do it, and you can just.
I'll watch.
I'll be either the leader or the martyr. One or the other. We're not undecided.
Exactly. And usually, when it's not like a production ready machine like this one is.
I understand.
I do live production, so the problem is if it breaks, it breaks in front of like thousands of people, which is a real bummer. And I've done that. But the other thing is, typically on my other computers, I'll always upgrade one quickly because of the show. But outside of that, I usually wait for the second update. there'll be a patch. Apple releases the OS, and within a week there'll be a patch.
Right.
And that patch was like,
that's the one you're waiting for.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. As soon as that's the gamma testing. That's what we tend to call it. There's a gamma test. There's alpha testing, which is just internal, beta testing, which is external, and gamma testing is when you actually buy it
I think this is germane for people who use their Macs for production.
So they'll patch it, and then they'll patch the patch, and the patch fixes whatever the patch broke when it,
How long do you wait on that chain?
Usually that happens in the first 2 or 3 weeks.
You don't want the first patch, you want the second patch?
Second patch, because the first patch will break other things.
But then the second patch could break things too.
It will, but it's less. Very quickly drops to, we're just doing security.
You don't want to wait till Delta?
What?
Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta, Epsilon, Zeta, Eta, Theta, Yoda. Gamma. How about wait to Kappa? Yeah, Lambda. Exactly. I'm gonna wait.
Wait until it's almost obsolete, and then I just update. I say, oh well, if you just stay a year behind everybody else, it'll sort itself out.
Mike Elgin, we lost you briefly, but we got you back. It's now dark in the Peloponnesus. Mike, are you near Sparta?
I am in Sparta. It's now called Sparty, but I am in the town of Sparta.
Wow,
this is Sparta.
Do you just walk around, just saying?
It's kind of interesting. In the Middle Ages, they dismantled the ruins of Sparta to build a big walled town called Maestros, like 5 miles away. And I went there today, and you could see all this like Spartan like marble like embedded into the walls. It's pretty crazy.
And isn't your wife writing a cookbook called The Spartan Diet or something like that?
We lose them.
Aren't you on the Spartan diet? There's a lot of latency. Oh, this is gonna make me sad.
Yeah, there's a lot. I'm sorry. It's very choppy. I didn't get that.
Isn't your wife writing a Spartan diet cookbook?
All I'm sounding.
That's like, right. We're finishing the book while we're here. So
awesome.
Doing a little bit of research and, part of it is just because it's kind of awesome. But part of it is just to do a little research here. And but that's what we're working on.
It's tax deductible. All right. We're going to keep working on our connection with Mike in Sparta in the Peloponnese. I think we found one drawback to working anywhere you want.
You got to have a good connection.
You should probably find a fiber connection. But every town is going to soon have that. See, I'm waiting until I can do Twit from a boat.
You can do it.
Well, we got to work on
that.
There's
a little bit of latency.
Yeah, we got to work on that.
600 milliseconds.
Yeah. As soon as I can get high-speed internet in the middle of the Atlantic, I am there.
Every time I do a speed test on that LTE iPad, new iPad, I think, oh, that is so close, if not exceeding, like some speeds I get at home. This is so tempting. I should do it. Well, it's nice. I should do like next week's Mac break, like on a swan boat in the public garden.
Because what I do is I do speed tests everywhere.
We could have a little internal competition, Chad, couldn't we? For best remote. And I have to say, the Peloponnese is in the lead.
That's pretty damn good.
Although we had Jeff Jarvis from the Bridge in Sydney. You saw the Opera House behind him. We've had some interesting calls. We've lost Mike again. We're going to work on that. Mm-hmm. And one other thing I want to ask you, Chad, before we go to break: do we on the editing machines? Do we wait to update, or because we use Apple Mac Pros with Final Cut Pro Studio? Yeah.
We tend to not update unless if the computer came with it.
So we're still sitting probably on Leopard.
Some of them still have, I think, Leopard. Say again?
They're all still Leopard.
Snow Leopard.
Flowmaster Alex, who now we know, by the way, because if you watch Before You Buy, we actually know he's got a little lair behind the wall, and he's listening.
And he's listening with the sand.
Just pop your head up over the wall there so we can...
That's a great shot.
We're waiting for Kurdistan. Is that what he said?
The sand. It's because
of
the sand.
Oh, we have a storage area network that it has to work with. So that's interesting. I didn't. So we are actually on a fairly old version.
See. I just want to say.
But I can be three steps ahead because I don't do anything important around here. So it's okay for me to upgrade all my Macs.
We never take your screen on productions or anything.
No, that's fine. That'll always work. All right, we're going to take a break. I'm by the way. I'm now in the App Store updating my apps because I thought, well, that's a good idea. Speaking of which, Sparrow's getting updated for retina support. That's nice. Are we sad about Sparrow? I'm just devastated. I love Sparrow as an email app.
I was angry with Mail, and then I just was like, it's just too complicated because Mail's so embedded with everything else that I'm doing that I either use Mail or I use the web page. Like I go to Gmail or whatever and do my thing.
I like Sparrow, and I'm sad. Google bought them. Kudos to the Sparrow team. They made a great Mac App Store app, which was $10, and a iPhone app, which was $5, that really integrated beautifully with Gmail, but all your email. And I just felt it was very elegant and had a unified inbox, and there was things I liked about it. But they've announced that they're not going to update it any further now that they're owned by Google. And I presume that what will happen, and I hope this is... This could be good, is that Google will then incorporate these features into their own apps. So at least iOS will benefit from it. If not, maybe I would love to see Google, a desktop app. Thank you. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more with Mike Elgin, who's dropped us, I think, again. We'll get back to him. It's great to have him, though, from the Peloponnese. I didn't know. He didn't even tell me he was, like, leaving town. He's, like, gone.
He's just, I want to do that. I was telling Carlita, I was like, I want a Johnny Quest life.
So great.
When I was a kid, I just imagined Johnny Quest and I was like, we have to hire Race Bannon to, teach the kids.
Did Johnny Quest have to actually go be race, from race to race, him. Or what did he do?
No, race was his, like,
No, tutor. I'm thinking of a Speed Racer, which was a similar.
Johnny Quest, his father was a scientist. They had the jet. And they had Race, and Race was like his security guard and a teacher. Isn't that awesome? Like a teacher that, can, beat people up. It's just awesome.
Alex Lindsay is here. Where are you going next?
I'm just going to D.C.
Oh.
And just for a couple of days.
How boring now. The nation's capital. Big deal. And then after that?
Houston next week.
That's fun.
And then back to D.C. a couple of weeks. And then
you're just all over the place.
And Florida.
Alex, you're the sort of person, though, when you say you're going to D.C., I think Denmark, Copenhagen.
Yeah. Yeah, the big research triangle in Denmark, Copenhagen.
Denali, Canada.
Alex Lindsay is here. So is Andy Inako, who is just Boston bound. He's just tied down. He's got roots.
They need me here, Leo. Yeah. It would break their hearts if I left them.
He's got a job to do. One thing that makes you more mobile, and I should, when Mike gets back, I'll ask him if he did this, is getting rid of the extra stuff in your life. And that's kind of a challenge, you know. I keep getting tempted just to get a big dumpster out in front of the house, just load it up, say, take it. But that's kind of irresponsible, especially since Jennifer did a $1 sale of all my stuff. $1. It went fast.
No one has to pick it up.
I wish she'd known about Gazelle. This was a few years ago. Now, this is what we do. We use gazelle.com. This is, you get more than a dollar. What do you want to sell? Choose from an iPhone, iPad, iPod, Apple TV, Apple laptops, Apple desktops, Apple displays, Blackberries. If you've got a Android phone from HTC, Motorola, Samsung, or LG, Nokia phone. Let's say, I think maybe it's time to retire this MacBook Air 11-inch and replace it with, say, a Retina display. Why not? How's the situation? It's good because I've been keeping it in a case. I've got all the cords and everything. I'm just checking these boxes at gazelle.com. You can do this, too, by the way, and get a 30-day quote. That means a quote, you don't have to act on it right now. The quote is good for 30 days. $287. That's great. That's money in your pocket. Now, here's the beauty part. When you check out, you can choose a check, PayPal, or, and I would recommend this, an Amazon gift card, and they'll bonus it another 5%. And given that Amazon sells everything you want to replace this stuff, that's a great place to go.
So I guess they're kind of ended up, if you're doing it through Amazon, are they kind of giving back their cut?
I think that's probably what they're doing, I don't know. I mean, it's just so cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. What a great company. Well-run. Nice guys. Their data experts, by the way, will wipe your data off if you forget to. This is kind of cool. I mean, they're looking at the quality of the thing, making sure, they can sell it at the price they quoted. Sometimes, I'm surprised, but I hear from people all the time, I said, they actually raise the amount of money they gave me. They have no obligation to do that. But if they say, no, you know what, this is better condition than you thought, and I've seen them do this, raise the amount of money you get. What a great way, if you're planning an upgrade, and I know many of you are, say an iPhone next generation, you want to visit Gazelle. Get a quote now for the old iPhone because I can promise you tomorrow it's worth less and the day after it's worth less and on and on and on. Gazelle.com. The best kind of recycling. You keep it moving by gazelling it. I know Mike's a big Gazelle fan. When we get him back, I'm going to ask him. I bet he gazelled a lot of stuff. Gazelle. Gazelle.com. You're watching Mac Break Weekly. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to the new time for the weekly daily Gizwiz, which now we've just renamed the Gizwiz. Dick DeBartolo in studio. This is the 1 year anniversary of our parade down the street.
I love it when Dick's in this too.
The Brickhouse. Dick is so much fun. He's going to bring a bunch of gadgets, and we will kind of relive some of the memories of the a year ago and the reopening of the. Or the opening of the Brickhouse studio exactly 1 year ago today. Next week, Aaron Hillegas joins us. He is the author of a brand new book, and he just sent it to me, and I'm very excited. Aaron, as you know, runs Big Nerd Ranch. I think you made the introduction. You took the class.
It's awesome.
He's the guy in the cowboy hat you've seen before.
He's fantastic.
This is a new one, and this might be from the class you took. This is for non-programmers and beginners,
right?
An introduction to Objective-C programming, what you need to know to write iOS and Mac apps. And it's designed. No, he has books for advanced users. You know, he's got the classic, which I have, Cocoa Programming for a Mac OS X, and iOS Programming, the Big Nerd Ranch Guide. That's the class you took. But this is new, Objective-C Programming, the Big Nerd Ranch Guide from Aaron Hillegas.
I think these are some of the best books out there for it.
Very. You know, you could work your way through this, and you would be ready to write iOS apps and desktop apps.
And even if you're, here's the thing that I found useful is I took the class, which works through the book, but you can ask questions and so on and so forth. But one of the things that I think worked really well was that now when I talk to programmers about what I want.
Yeah, you can speak their language.
And I understand how hard something is. Like, this is going to be hard. That's not going to be hard. This is just calling a class versus they're going to have to write their own code. And that's the...
Really, that is useful.
So it's useful to go through a book like this. Even if you think you want to develop something, you're going to hire someone to do it.
Right.
It just means that you can speak you can speak Objective-C.
And this starts from the beginning, installing Apple's developer tools. One of the things I love about Mac, I always have, is that it comes with, you know, a bunch of stuff installed, and then you can easily install Xcode, and then and then the world is your oyster. You can
put any language you want. $5 or something?
No, it's free now.
Is it free now?
It was. They were charging $5. Yeah. I bought it for some reason.
It's great.
But it is free now. So the OS X Mountain Lion up-to-date application has gone live. This allows any customer purchasing a Mac on or after June 11th. That would be you, Alex. That would be me as well. We bought our MacBook Retinas to get your upgrade for free. So you could do this right now if you want, Alex. It's gone live.
I could see if my Retina is going to be compatible with Mountain
Lion. Well, what happens is you submit a claim and then they send you an app code.
So I can do the upgrade.
So you can do the upgrade for free.
I guess I'll just get the claim and then I'll just hang on to the claim.
I would do it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that this has gone live. Well, wait a minute. Now, I just went there and I don't see it live, but this is what 9 to 5 Mac was claiming. Now, maybe it hasn't. Maybe it's only live in some areas. It's not live for me. Okay.
You got my hopes up.
All right. Let's talk about the new iPhone. We're still trying to get Mike Elgin back from the Peloponnese.
I just like saying that.
The latest somebody, this is such bogosity, but Reuters now says, according to two sources, we have confirmation that the 19 pin connector will be the new connector. I'm also hearing from others that Apple will have an adapter. Of course, Apple's not saying, and even Reuters does not know whether the adapter will come with the iPhone or be an additional charge. I wonder, what do you think, Andy? I would, if I were Apple, I'd bundle it. You've got to respond to these issues.
I would say that they would charge extra for it. I don't think they'd put it inside the box.
It's just a piece of plastic.
Yeah, well, we don't know that. If it's just pin-for-pin rerouting conduits, that's one thing. If there's a chip inside there to make sure that you're not pirating it's a new controller or something like that. That could be something else. Also, you look behind at every single box of every product that Apple has made. Have they ever included something recently that they don't feel is that you don't absolutely need?
Right.
So that's the only reason why I don't think. I do think that if there's a way to save $1.30 on every unit sold, they're going to save that $1.30.
Did you, Alex, buy the Thunderbolt Ethernet?
Yes.
For your Retina, so did I.
I did. I what I wanted to do, though, is I went actually, that's actually where I was in the Sydney Apple store, I was buying it, and I forgot that I needed one. I want the USB one, though. I don't want to use up my Thunderbolts with.
You got two Thunderbolts.
I know, but I use both of them.
Yeah, actually, you probably don't need all that speed, do you? Yeah, you probably don't need all that
speed. I don't need, you know, for Ethernet, the USB is just fine. I'd rather put it on my USB and not use up my Thunderbolts, because I put drives on those and video input. The reason you need two Thunderbolts, or the reason it's better, is because if you want to do a HD camera into your laptop and then write it to an external Thunderbolt drive that's like SSD, then you need two Thunderbolts.
Right.
You can try to pass through, but it's not as stable.
Right.
So it's really great to do it that way. That's why I like to have two. This is the best laptop ever made. I mean, they're all good, but I mean, I have to say that if anyone's
it's the
on
best
the fence,
I got to tell you, it's the best computer I have ever used.
Yeah, it's stunning.
It's very expensive.
It's stunning.
Just so you know, do you think an iPad Mini will also come out when the iPhone next comes out? I'm going to call it.
I really want one. I'm really finding myself, not from a price perspective, but just from a usage perspective, I find that the iPad is just a little bigger than something that I carry around all the time. I realize I just use the iPhone a lot more than the iPad because I don't want to carry the iPad around.
Right.
I mean, I've had these smaller tablets now for many, many months. And now it seems, as a person who relies on my iPad for everything that I do outside of the office, I'm really now used to having a second screen next to the iPad. And when you have something like the Nexus 7, where for $199, I can have a second screen that will have like a web browser open or Netflix or something else like that, I wouldn't spend an extra $500, $600, $700 for that kind of a feature. But given that it's a more portable tablet, something I'm going to be taking out when I don't necessarily want to have my 10-inch, it really makes the case that this 10-inch iPad tablet can be that much more useful if you're now going to have it in a two-screen configuration. So having had more chances to use these smaller tablets has really, over the past year, made me rethink a lot of my assumptions about how people would use a 7-inch. I've always almost exclusively thought that the 7-inch tablets for people who either can't afford an iPad or can't make the case for owning it. Now I think that it would also make a great accessory for laptops, for full-size tablets. So it's really interesting to see how people would react to it. And I do think that at this point, I'll be kind of surprised if we don't see a mini iPad at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, we're not kicking around the Nexus 7, and it's just a great little machine. I mean, I really like that form factor a lot.
By the way, apologies. iMore, Renee Ritchie writing at iMore was the one who had the story that the adapter, there will be an adapter for the new smaller.
I have to admit, with the European regulations, I'm kind of surprised that they don't just move to USB. I think it's licensing.
I also think the 19-pin connector, they want more capability than USB can give you.
Right.
Right?
But you're connecting it to a USB on the other end.
So,
as
a test of this adapter theory, they did the same thing with the MagSafe on the Retina display. You got your adapter with you?
I didn't know there was an adapter for this.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
You want to go to the Apple Store in Sydney again?
Yes.
We've got Mike Elgin back, and now he's gone inside. I guess the cafe just didn't.
Rely on public networks like that. As people were showing up at this cafe, I think they were using the Wi-Fi connection. It got really dicey. Yeah. But I'm back in my apartment, and I have a really good connection. So
awesome.
I'm glad to be back on the show.
Awesome.
I hope I didn't miss anything good.
Obviously, you haven't watched
this show
much. We were just waiting for you to come back. I'm glad we got the cafe shot, and I think that probably makes sense that you probably did have to move in. But that was good to have it as long as we had it. Research says Samsung has sold 10 million Galaxy S3s, but the next iPhone is still the most wanted phone. This is from 451 Research. Change Wave. Unprecedented advanced demand, higher than any other iPhone model has had before. This confirms what you were saying, Alex. 14% of respondents said very likely. Let's try it here. Presumably people who are in our live studio. This is a survey of the five people. No, wait. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 people in our audience today. They're here for Mac Break Weekly, so presumably they're Mac fans. How many of you are very likely or more to buy the next iPhone? Show of hands. 1, 2, 3. 30% of respondents.
So 30%. From our scientific research here, we're going to say 30% of the United States is going to buy an iPhone, which means that's going to be 100 million.
By the way, that's 100 million. Exactly. That's double the amount. I got to point out. The Change Wave said they said 14. We got 30%.
And I would argue that it's not skewed at all by the fact that we're doing a Mac based show.
Not in the least.
In the audience. I mean, I don't know.
Well, they don't say how they chose their people.
Exactly.
They don't even say.
Also, like at the door, it's not like you were interviewing people and only letting in people who are iPhone users. So anybody could come in.
You didn't do that, did you, Alex?
Should have done.
That would have been a good idea.
Well, but here's the thing about this information and this idea about how well Samsung mini tablets and big phones are going to sell are based in a vacuum of Apple products in that space. I did an analysis of last year, and if you look at like who's making money, the actual revenue and profits in mobile devices. All of the profits are smaller than the iPad and bigger than the iPhone. The things are the same size as the Apple devices, or bigger in the case of tablets, smaller in the case of phones. Nobody's making a penny. Companies are losing money. So all the competitive money is being made in that space. And that's why Apple is getting into that space with both the next iPhone and the next tablet. The mini iPad will crowd out Samsung, and the slightly bigger screen iPhone will a little bit crowd out Samsung. So all these numbers about Samsung based in an environment of, in an absence of Apple devices in mid-sized devices can be all thrown away as soon as Apple ships this stuff.
Tim Cook said that Apple will not leave, this is a direct quote, will not leave a price umbrella for competitors.
Yep.
Exactly.
And that's what you're talking about, right? There will be no no place out of the Apple sphere. There'll be no.
They did that with the iPods too. I mean, they had you had shuffles and you had nanos and you had you right. know. So the thing is it's a pattern that Apple's used before. What I'm curious about is what price will that be? I mean, I think that if they come in with a 7-inch iPad that is $199, they'll leave nothing but stubble. I mean, there'll be nothing left. I mean, you know, and I'm not sure whether they're going to be that competitive or not.
It really depends on how.
Say again.
For the mini iPad, I'm thinking it's going to be $250. They're going to be competing against a gazillion $200
right.
things, but $50 more will get you the Cadillac.
I think $249 or $299 will make it very competitive. I just think that
$299 is death. $299. I shouldn't speak in absolutes. $249 is I think the highest they can charge for a smaller pad.
Near death.
I blurted that out and I shouldn't have said that. What I mean is that I think that they'll have some challenges ahead if they price it that high. If they put that much of a price differential right. between a mini iPad and a $199 device of the quality of the Nexus 7. When you look at, there was another report, I think that was got a lot of press over the past week about the difference between saturation of the iPhone in the United States versus Europe, saying that because the price of the iPhone isn't nearly as subsidized, nearly as cheap in Europe as it is in the United States, that's the reason why Android is maybe unnaturally higher adoption rates. So on the one hand, it does say that no people aren't looking at Android and saying, "Gee, we like this as much as the iPhone." But on the other hand, it's also saying when we look at an iPhone versus an Android device, the Android device is cheaper. We don't care that the iPhone is much, much better. So I'm not sure that people will. I believe that maybe people will be able to say, for $50 more, I could get the brand that everybody recognizes. I think when you jump that to $100 more, the sort of person who's walking into the store for a mini tablet who probably has been talked up from a $100 ebook, I'm not sure that they would see the differences between Android 4.2 and iOS 6 on a mini tablet.
But the people who can't see the difference are not the people Apple goes for. Apple's revenue model is all about making money from the hardware, from the apps, from the whole services thing, the content downloads, all that stuff. And if you look at the market for phones in general, Apple's made, you know, with 4% or whatever it is of the entire cell phone market, Apple's making, I don't know, what is it, 70-75% of the profits. The reason they're doing that is they're going after the profitable people. Boy. And if somebody's wants to save $50 and rather have a Samsung rather than an iPad, that's not the person who's going to make them profitable with content and buying movies and all that kind of stuff.
The thing is that with the Nexus 7, we keep on talking about $199, but the one that's sold out is the $249 one. I mean, you know, that's right.
More memory. You're absolutely right.
Those are the ones that actually sold. They went in thinking, $199, and they walked out with a 16 gig that's $249. You know, and that's and I think that could be the same situation for Apple. I do think $299
is $300 big one from Apple might be the one that outsells the $250
right.
one.
But I think Apple being able to have the press that they have a $199 or $249 version. I think would be, you know, I think that's going to be useful for getting people thinking about
There's a name for that. Remember, in Predictably Irrationally, talked about that kind of pricing structure where you have a low price that people remember, but you never end up selling that one.
Right.
You always sell the next one up from that. And you also have a high price. And the one, I can't remember what that's called, but there's a name for it. What a good book if you've not read Predictably Irrational. But he's talking about, and the example he used was the Wall Street Journal subscription model,
right.
where they had a really cheap one, but they put that there because you go, I could, for $15 more, I can get both the online and the print version. I'm going to do that. And they basically are upselling you without anything. And I bet you, I don't know if Apple's clever enough to do that. They're clever enough. I don't know if if they do that or not.
Yeah.
But it would be smart to have. They've never done this to my knowledge, but it'd be smart to have a $250 one, but the one you want's $300, right?
Yeah. It is. I say the real smart is to have one figure
have
out a way to make
the $199 that no one wants.
Yeah. Or whatever, but I mean having a $199 so for the handful of people that really
you already have that. You have the touch.
Yeah.
I think there's an excellent reason why you can't buy an iPhone in the United States of America, you can't buy an iPhone for one penny more than what you can buy an Android phone for. I don't. I mean, there's
Well, there is now the 3GS is free, right?
They're different. There are different price structures for different volumes. But if you want to spend $200 for an iPhone, if you want to spend $99 for an iPhone, if you want to get an iPhone for free, all those bases are covered. I'm just saying that I'd be surprised if they could get away with charging 50% more for a iPad mini than for a comparable, which what looks like to be comparable in every way, shape, and form, a Google-based 7-inch tablet.
Yeah, and,
well,
maybe
it's a lack of imagination on my part, and I do understand the idea that you want the people you want to invite into the tent are the people who have the money to spend once they get inside the tent. But I think that this is a really much more consumer-y device than the iPad is, and I think that different rules are going to apply.
Well, and
that's just my hunch.
And for people who, a lot of people are wondering why is it important that Apple takes care of that lower market, and a lot of it has to do with standardization. I mean, one of the when you're that leader and you have a lot of people using your software, it's easier to, you have more developers, you have more cases, you have more, all of these other things. And that is a factor that affects all of your sales. And so I think it is important that they find a way to, for Apple, it is important for them to find their way into that market to make sure that it doesn't, dilute, from their perspective. I mean, I don't, from Apple's perspective, I think it's important.
I think also the elephant, it's not the elephant in the living room, that's a wrong cliche, but the sort of unappreciated factor in all of these 7-inch or thereabouts tablets is the children's market. And I wrote a column about this recently. Both the Android space and Apple are going to be going after kids. I think that the little tablets...
Well, and not just kids, kids at home, kids at school. I mean, the thing is, I think the school market is a massive market for Apple, and I think that they
got that exactly right. And they, I talked to educators about this, and they won't send kids out the door with a $500 iPad that they're going to get mugged over. Right. It's a very desirable consumer electronics device, and it's just a safety issue for the kids. A $250 device is something, and they're going to get discounts. School district's going to be buying, 3,000 of these things. The price is going to be $175 or whatever, and they're going to be happy to put those in kids' backpacks and send them out the front door.
I mean, $199 7-inch iPad is Apple's OLPC. I mean, that's what they're doing.
When Author came out, we kind of talked about that. We said, hey, that's a great start, but so you're going to have textbook authoring, blah, 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 but you've got to have a low price product to put that into everybody's hands, because most schools are not going to spend $500 minimum.
And this is the time, because all the schools are trying to figure out we deal with a lot of schools are trying to figure out where curriculum is going to go over the next 10 years. Everyone knows that it's broken. Everybody knows. I mean, we're now past the, do we keep it the same or not? This is the time that we're going to change it. So a lot of schools are going to make the decision over the next 10 years how they move technology into the classroom. And this is Apple's chance to do it, or Android's chance to do it. I think that Apple's better positioned, but if they don't find a better price point, it'll be an Android
market.
That's
interesting. I never thought about the education.
We're talking
hundreds, really good point.
Hundreds of billions of dollars. Yeah. We're not talking about little numbers.
And it's the key to their publishing dominance.
It is.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned.
I have to think that at some point when Apple went into Pearson and McGraw-Hill and all of these textbook publishers, they said, we're going to make an iBook author, but you might also want to know we're going to make a device for schools that will make it more affordable. I think that's the missing piece, isn't it? We said that during the announcement.
I mean, coming out in the fall. It isn't the right sale time. I mean, the time to do it, if they were trying to sell it into this year, would have been,
now,
of course, May, April or May.
Yeah.
But
no, you're
as
right.
Far
my
as,
kids' schools already made that buying decision for freshmen long ago.
But what it does is it sets it up so that they're having a 2013 conversation with something that's matured and successful.
D. Flores says something interesting in the chat room. Why do you think Apple went back to EPEAT? Because many school districts require recyclable.
But those aren't going to be recyclable. I mean, it'll be.
That's true. They won't be EPEAT. They'll never make it.
They'll never get EPEAT. Yeah. So.
The other sort of free floating question that I was having, especially when I was looking at the Nexus 7 pad, is would Apple screw up a mini iPad? Google had really nothing to lose when they were putting the feature, and ASUS, when they were just putting the features into the smaller pad, so much so that there's very little this little tablet can't do. It really is a full...
There's an interesting thing for recyclability. You could pry the back off of that and detach the battery. Mm-hmm. It's got a removable, replaceable battery. You could detach a lot of it. That one is not glued down. Mm. That's kind of interesting.
So what? So there's that. And there's also I don't feel as though this is a chilling concern. But would Apple do that sort of really horrible, like, person in a black T-shirt against a white background speaking through tented fingers saying, "We reconceived the tablet for the 7-inch form. There is no on-screen keyboard because you do everything via voice. There is no Wi-Fi because it's all near-field communications instead." Like, yeah, but that tablet sucks that you just described. Why didn't you just build an iPad that's smaller? We've been asking for an iPad that's smaller. You're welcome, customers. No, don't tent your fingers. Tell us why you didn't make this a functional. I want to be able to use iWork on this.
Andy's on a roll. We're going to take a break. We got more coming up. Andy Iannocco, Mike Elgin, Alex Lindsay. We got picks. We got tips. Leo Laporte. But first, I got to tell you, I'm so excited. The new Squarespace is here. Squarespace 6, we've been waiting for it for some time. And they have shipped, and I got to tell you, this is a huge revolution. Everything you need to create an exceptional website, plus a free trial that requires no credit card, that makes it so easy to take advantage of these new features. Things like the new responsive design. This is the state of the art in web design these
days.
That's what
we use.
Yeah, a site now, you don't have a separate mobile site.
Mm-hmm.
That's so 1999. You have one site that works on all platforms, whatever the size. The ease, and one of the ways they do this is they process every image into multiple sizes automatically for you, so that when you resize the device, you know, resize the page on a different device, you get the best image size for that device. It's so slick. This is all automatic, by the way, for a blog, for a photo portfolio, for an art portfolio, for e-commerce. It couldn't be easier to set up a page, drag and drop, to make everything work. If you know CSS, of course, the sky's the limit, but you don't have to completely redesign that page to make it work. Their importers from Tumblr, WordPress, and Blogger mean that you don't have to, when you try this new site, you just get all your data over, including all the links, all the SEO, all the comments. You could post directly from the web or with their great Android and iPad and iPhone apps, which not only let you post, look at this, how they integrate the maps in, isn't that sweet? But also, let you do stats.
Well, the great thing is that it's super easy to update and work with. And if you're geeky and you want to add a lot of customization, you can do that too. So you're not limited to only what you can do with the WYSIWYG. You can actually, you know, we have a lot of custom code, e-commerce, everything else built into both DB Garage and Pixel Core, and those are both sitting on Squarespace.
Now, you may be concerned, the new Squarespace 6, how do I use it? They've got at workshops.squarespace.com webinars for everybody, free interactive classes so that you can learn all about this. I got to tell you, this is the time to go to squarespace.com. You've heard us talk about it for so long. And try it for free. Click that green button, the try it free button. Is it still green? Actually, I have to look. No, and now it's yellow, the get started button. And you can try it free for 14 days, full support, everything you need. Don't need a credit card. If you decide to buy, we've got a special deal for you. You could take advantage of all these 50-plus new features, the new design, everything, all the great stuff. Use the offer code TWIT7, TWIT, T-W-I, I'm sorry, MacBreak7. There you go. Got to do it for the right show. MacBreak7, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase. That includes monthly and annual plans. And, of course, for the best savings, do the annual plan. They have not, for all these new features, they have not increased the price. It's still a remarkable $16 a month when you buy an annual plan for the full unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited pages, galleries, and blogs, unlimited contributors. This is really a good deal. They do have an $8 a month plan, and there's, if you bill month to month, you can go to $10 a month. So they have a variety of plans to fit your needs. A lot of people do Squarespace for one-off sites because you can do that inexpensively. But even for a site that you know, is going to generate a lot of traffic, this is the best deal out there. $16 for hosting and the best content software. I just love it. Squarespace.com. Please, when you decide to buy, you don't need this for the free trial. You don't need anything for the free trial. But when you decide to buy, use MacBreak 7 for the 7th month. Get it, July. MacBreak 7 as the offer code. And you can try Squarespace 6 brand new. It is so sweet. It is so nice. They've done such a good job. Back to MacBreak Weekly. Amazon to introduce 5 or 6 new tablets, including, according to Staples, a 10-inch. something compete directly head to head with the iPad.
5 or 6, really?
So let's see. So the current one is like 7 inches. So that's 7, 8 inches, 9 inches, 10 inches, and 11 inches.
And then, crazy.
Then the A5 model for the UK market, and a 14-inch model for the legal market.
This is coming from the president of U.S. retail at Staples, Demos Parneros. He told Reuters, Amazon set to introduce, 5 or 6 new tablet SKUs, with at least one of them sporting a 10-inch screen. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're talking about different capacity, maybe a refresh version of the original one, and then a larger one, each with different capacities, or maybe one has a free smart cover with it and not.
One with mobile broadband. They'll have two. They'll have like half of them will have mobile broadband, or there may be a phone or two in there too.
Yeah, why not? Throw everything against the wall.
I think that a lot of these manufacturers aren't real. I mean, like when you go to CES and there's a whole section that's committed to iPhone and iPad accessories, the reason they can do that is because there's only a couple sizes. You know, there's only a couple form factors. I was talking to someone about, like, why don't you make these for Android, you know, whatever. And they said, well, there's too many different ones, and they change too quickly. And with Apple, we know that's going to be there for a year. There's
who
only
cares
one.
About accessories? There's that's not – who cares?
Really? Okay. I have cases and
I know, because you're an iPhone guy, and the iPhone hasn't changed in 4 years. So you can get lots of accessories. I don't think the world is looking to decide what phone they can get based on what case availability.
But it definitely improves. I'm not saying that they don't make the decision. No, they don't make the decision that way. But it improves the quality of life that you have with it. Having all those, I think so. Well, you have a case.
I have a case on this. I don't have a case on my Android phone because they don't make it.
Yeah.
And I don't need one. Dang it.
Point set match.
I mean, obviously, Amazon is not a consumer electronics company. They want a showrooming device. That's all they want. They want something that you.
It's for selling Amazon goods.
Exactly.
It's a Mike Elgin says, who is this Mike Elgin? Microsoft has more taste than Apple?
Yep.
Okay. True. Defend yourself, Elgin.
Well, the reason I wrote this is, as we all know, that Pirates of Silicon Valley, the PBS special.
Triumph of the Nerds.
Triumph of the Nerds. Steve Jobs very famously said, Microsoft has no taste.
They said Bill Gates has no taste. It was very personal.
Bill Gates, right. And he said, you know, I don't mean that in a small way. I mean in a big way. They're not artists like we are. They're just a bunch of geeky engineers. His implication was they have bad taste, and the only time that they ever get good taste, do things like proportional space fonts and stuff like that, is when they copy us, the people who have good taste.
Right.
So he made a big deal about contrast. And, you know, this is beautiful reality distortion field, Steve Jobs. I mean, that idea that Microsoft has no taste and Apple has taste is baked into everyone's thinking about.
We all bought it.
Absolutely. We still do. Yeah. It still colors. And partly it helps that it's kind of true, broadly speaking.
Yes.
But it just occurred to me that there's an aspect of Windows 8, Windows Phone, that if you look at what they're doing, what they're trying to do, whether you like it or not is an entirely different issue, but what they're trying to do is something that is of spectacularly good taste. They base the entire look and feel of the Metro UI on Swiss rail signage. It's based on typography as opposed to garish, you know, imagery. Meanwhile, Apple is doing something that technically is very bad taste, which is skeuomorphic design. The idea that when you get the iPod, the podcast app, for example, I don't know if you've played with this.
Yeah, we've shown this.
It's not a very good app. Yeah, it's not a very good app.
It's very buggy, unfortunately.
It's really buggy. It's not as feature-rich as many of the apps that are available for iOS, but it has this tape recorder, has a reel-to-reel tape that actually plays when you're playing a podcast. And it's, you know, people say, well, I like it. Well, whether you like it or not, it's skeuomorphic design, and skeuomorphic design comes from somewhere. Like in the same way that you said proportionally spaced fonts come from somewhere. They come from beautiful books and typography. Well, skeuomorphic design comes from somewhere. It comes from hucksters selling you shoddy goods that are gussied up to look like the quality goods that you actually want to buy. And there, if you look at skeuomorphic design on Wikipedia or any other site, they'll give lots of many examples of kind of things that represent other things.
Leather grain plastic, for instance.
or leather grain apps, which is the big one of the big themes. If you look at Find My Friends, which I think is one of the most egregious examples, here's something that's not a digital version of something analog and familiar. You know, there was no analog equivalent to be able to use satellites to find out where your spouse and your kids are. But they decided to encase it in not just leather, but like it looks like a
horrible
made in a summer camp.
It's not even good leather. It's cheesy leather.
It's arbitrary. Not only is the application of the design arbitrary, the application of the concept is arbitrary. Some Apple apps are skeuomorphic. Some aren't. The ones that are skeuomorphic vary in their aesthetic approach. And taken together,
this looks like
which app is this?
This is Find My Friends. It looks like GIMP. It looks like there's leather stitching. It's bad leather. It's not even good leather. It's like it couldn't be cheesier.
On the iPhone where it started off too.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say,
look at that. Like, there's an example. There's that big. You can't even buy a ribbon mic like that anymore.
And
I have to wonder why the dialer app doesn't have a rotary dial. I mean, if you're going to go that far. But on the other hand, I admire the detail. For instance, the tape reels, as you play the podcast, it gets bigger on the right and smaller on the left and slows down appropriately. I mean, somebody spent hours.
But why wouldn't they put that? Now, here's why it gets me on the voice memo app. He said after waking up his phone again that when you're recording like a lecture or an interview or something, the thing you want more than anything else is some visual indication that yes, it is recording. So if there's some place, if there's one app in which I would love to see two reel to reels actually spinning, it would be on this lap. Instead, they give me this lovely like rendered photo that takes up four-fifths of the
screen. And that is a good point. The other issue is that it takes up so much space, as you point out, Andy. I mean, almost all of the UI on podcast app on the iPad is something that's completely non-functional.
I think part of that is
it's not non-functional. I should point something out.
Okay, let's see the mic. Here's zooming in.
You can do one thing. If you tap on the mic, the VU meter actually does something.
Oh, I've never seen that. That's kind of funny. That's excessive skeuomorphism.
I mean, it's well.
So it's not like there's no point to it.
Yeah, they're skillful at it. I'm not saying they're not skillful
super
and detailed,
skillful.
But here's the final irony in all of this, which is that Apple's famous for its design, mostly for its hardware. The Apple hardware, especially nowadays, if you look at the MacBook Air, if you look at the iPhone, if you look at the iMac, these are beautiful, beautiful devices. I mean, just from an industrial design point of view, they're absolutely gorgeous, And they come from some place, too. They come from a European minimalism, a Bauhaus kind of European minimalism, which ironically is exactly the origins of Microsoft's design for Metro and Windows 8.
I can't disagree with you. I have to say there's a certain anodyne simplicity to the Metro interface. There's no shadows. There's no rounded corners.
It's not 3D. It's flat.
And it's clearly and intentionally an antidote to what the skeuomorphism of Apple. And by the way, this skeuomorphism is, I think, pretty new with Apple. I remember the early Mac didn't have a lot of it. I mean, they did it initially because they wanted to, for instance, folders and pages, you know, and the little corners and stuff were to tell you this is a document, this is a folder within which, and that I think was necessary in the early days of the system.
There's an immersive quality to it, though. I mean, I need to say I used to be a long time ago in another life. I was an interface designer, and so
good. So you're standing here,
and all I did was skeuomorphic.
That was in movies, right?
No. This is for
software.
This is Rotobund. And
there's an immersive quality to Costco shopping carts.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just
good taste.
I'm just saying that the and I built all of them in 3D. I mean, so they literally every button was rendered.
But taste is, by the way, definition a subjective thing.
We did a ton of tests though, and so the thing is that there was a big discussion about this 20 years ago or whatever, 15 years ago when I was doing the interface design about we showed target audiences, you know, things that felt like an interface that looked like you could touch it and it was a real thing, and then one that was all text and much more, not quite Windows 8, but I mean very similar to that look, and it was like 8 out of 10 wanted the one that looked like pictures. like wanted to look like some, like a physical thing they could
so
touch.
So you're saying this
it was something people want. It was clear. I mean, you can decide whether 8 out of 10 people have bad taste, but I'm just saying that from a pure consumer perspective, we did a ton of testing on it, and it was clear. I mean, it wasn't like close. It wasn't like what do they actually want? Now, what I will say is I will agree with you that a lot of the stitching and stuff like that, I don't like it, but I'm just saying that it is a very successful model for...
It's a little Baroque.
But it's a very successful model for interfaces. And the what I wish they'd spend a little more time on is actually making sure the podcast one, for instance, that you're using in the article actually worked. And also just to pick at that a little bit, is that the going fast goes too fast. Like you need one notch in between, you know, because, you know, it's one of those things. But so that, you know, that I think that I think the reason Apple uses a lot of this is because they don't want to put a lot of buttons in. They want to keep it simple. They don't want to give you every option like me. I want to have
well, there's different kinds of skeuomorphism.
Thing.
For instance,
but I think they use it up by creating a design.
They use it up.
They're just using up the blank space with something that looks cool because they don't want to give you any more buttons.
I think it makes sense, for instance, to have a turtle and a tortoise, perhaps, on either side of the dial. I think you can make an argument for that, that's iconography that makes it easy to understand. But I don't know.
I don't consider that. I think
the reel-to-reel is what's crashing it. That's the problem.
The reel-to-reel is... it's not even crashing. A metaphor that people in the digital age... Right. Can identify with. I mean, you might as well have a rotary dial.
I miss my reel-to-reel.
This is a big issue with icons because skeuomorphism is kind of good for icons because you need some symbol that means
right.
something to someone.
Right.
But it's you're kind of there's a disconnect now because the icon for save is always a diskette, and there are kids who right. don't have any idea what that is.
That's a good point too. What the hell is that diskette thing? anyway,
well, Chinese characters used to be pictures. So, you know,
yeah.
you know,
pictograms so, make sense. Pictograms make sense, and then they modify.
They just slowly turn into something
that's a very good point.
Isn't that anymore?
If you look at the Chinese character for man, you could see where it was a human.
Right.
And then for woman, it actually has a little pregnant belly on it.
Well, I like the, I think if I remember correctly, like the Japanese character or Chinese symbol for patience is a knife on the heart.
Ooh.
Which is, you know, it's like, wow. you know, it's a, but I mean, it's like that, that's a, but I find that picture is very interesting. You know, I believe. Someone's going to correct me.
So I think we should move along.
Yep.
You make your point, and I'm glad you made that point. And I have to say, I've been complaining about skeuomorphism as it has gotten more and more. For some reason, Apple's made some decision at some point to get really aggressive in it.
When I worked on interfaces, it came up every single title. There'd be a discussion about whether we make them look physical or whether we make them abstract. And so then we'd go do a whole bunch more tests, and maybe it'd be different now. But it was like, we'd do a bunch of more tests, and people were just clearly felt basically they had a warmer relationship with something that it felt like they were immersed into, rather than than just something. It made the device or made the interface feel cold.
I think a little bit about this in terms of the design of our video, and one of the things that I think a lot of technology shows do is they look modern and brushed steel. And very polished. And we try to make this homey and warm. So we use warmer colors. Right. We use retro steampunky kind of looks like the gear. The gear is, there's nothing more analog than this gear behind my head. Mm-hmm. That is an analog, very analog device. So in a way, we do skeuomorphism in the design. I mean, look at this chair. This chair is that I'm sitting in is aircraft. I mean, there's no reason for it to be an aircraft wing.
Right,
but that's what it is—hammered aluminum behind me.
That all creates an experience. I mean,
it creates an experience, and it's supposed to make people feel more at home, more homey, not so put off by the coldness of technology. Yeah. I mean, that's my thinking. So maybe I'm skeuomorphic. Maybe that's what I do too. Yeah,
but that's not really what's. I mean, I don't think that's quite what skeuomorphism is. You're not pretending that something is what it isn't.
Well, it's not a gear,
right?
And I'm not riding an airplane wing.
Well, it's different when you have, like, getting back when you say that using a tortoise and a hare, people understand that it's between fast and slow. It's not like you're saying, just as you would in real life, you grab onto an animal and drag them.
That's not skeuomorphism because real right. players don't have tortoises and hares. They have the real part of it is the skeuomorphic part. That's just good iconography, and I like that tortoise.
Exactly,
and hare.
I agree.
It's nice.
I think we've already done our OS X tip, which is how to get ready for tomorrow's Mountain Lion release. Unless, Andy, you have some other OS X tipology.
I have a tip for that I can say for next week.
Well, no, let's
it might be a tip that's kind of set to expire because
you better do it now then.
Yeah, exactly. You know that a lot of that so many of the previous that Apple has basically raised iWork.com and MobileMe.com to the ground, pulled the buildings down, plowed up the crops, poured salt into the field so that would never grow again. All that sort of stuff that you remember from classical history. However, some of their leavings archaeologically are left behind inside system preferences. If you look in system preferences, you can still see a panel for Mobile Me, for instance. There are two, if you don't like that, or if you don't like that, you can dive into the library directory and physically remove that plugin, but that's really not necessary because there is actually a mechanism built in so that you can actually hide any system preference panel that you don't actually want to be able to look at. Here's two tips because you also forget, because since you do most of your clicking inside the system preferences window directly, system preferences is actually an application with a menu. So what you can actually do is go into the view menu, click on customize, and suddenly every single one of those system preference icons now has a checkbox next to it. So if you just uncheck the one next to Mobile Me and then click on the done button, then it will just simply disappear. It'll still be there installed, but you will never see it again. And if you ever need to see all the ones that you have hidden away, they're all still available in the view icon.
How long has this been in there? Holy cow. Look at that. I could just I don't need flash player control panel wasting my time. Wow. I don't need a software update control panel in my control panel. Wow, this is cool. Time machine, go away. Now, I can still access it. How?
It's still there in the view menu. Okay. So that if you ever want to get at it, it's still, going to be right there.
Because I spend a lot of time scanning this, trying to remember where network settings are, things like that. So take out the stuff you don't use. I don't need Mobile Me anymore. This is great. Andy.
Also, you'll find that after you uncheck it and it disappears, if you ever ask for that again, if you go to View, Customize, Mobile Me will reappear unchecked, so you can simply check it back again. But again, we're talking about Mobile Me as an example, but this will work with anything that you've got. If you need to streamline your system preps, particularly if you're in the family tech support guy and I want only the system preferences that my cousin, my uncle, my mom will ever have to deal with. I don't want them to mess with the users and groups. I don't want them to have to ever mess with speech, time machine, the startup disk, or software update. I will just limit them to 5. They can change the desktop pattern. They can change the volume, and that's it.
So that's another good reason to do this. That's great. They'll take it out in Mountain Lion. Now that I finally, after how many years, you told me about this. This is great.
I could have had a V8 moment. I mean,
very nice. Thank you, Andy. I'm glad you didn't save that. Because you're right, we don't know what's going to happen. Well, he knows, but he won't talk. Alex Lindsay, do you have an iOS tip you would like to pass? You don't have to.
I do.
You're giving me a funny look.
No, I
you
do.
You got one. What is it?
It's just a charger.
That's the iPad charger, the 10-watt charger.
Yeah, so here's the tip. You were actually discussing this with the Borek on Sunday. So
it's a good tip.
So here's the tip is... is that Dvorak was it's not charging fast. It took all day. It took all day. It takes like a week to charge that thing. You know. So the amperage coming out of your laptop and your iPhone charger is much smaller than your iPad charger. And so if you use, you know, if you're going to charge your iPad,
I don't know if you can see. It's kind of hard to see these tiny letters.
If you're going to charge your iPad, you always want to use your iPad charger and your iPhone charger. Your iPhone, I find, will charge a lot faster on it, too.
Can I extend the tip a little bit? Go through, because we all have now a bunch of USB chargers.
Right.
All kinds, right? Look at the charger and look at how many volts and how many amps on the charger.
And watts.
Well, volts times amps is watts. So this is 5 volts at 2 amps, which is 10 watts.
Right.
But the truth is, many things will charge faster.
Everything. So the thing is that you throw away all of those other USB chargers that you have.
I have a ton of chargers that have 5 volts, 0.0 amps, 0.08 amps, something like that.
I mean, so what I do is I bought actually a bunch of these. Now, you can also
These are great because they're 2 amps.
Right. And what I also have, the plug bug.
Yes.
you know, that goes on your amps. So that one has a lot more juice to it as well. So you can use a plug bug, which I think I have.
This is. I just realized this, and I went through my drawers, and I have hundreds of USB chargers. And you don't want the ones that are, 800 milliamps times 5 volts, because it's going to take you twice as long or more to charge your stuff.
So it's really important that it'll charge your Mophies faster. It'll charge like everything faster. So you want to use that. And then my second little travel tip is
that's a good tip.
See this guy?
What's that? Oh, it's pretty. It's a pocket Wi-Fi.
So I got that in Australia. Pretty much whenever I go somewhere, any new country that I go to, I buy one of these because it's a lot cheaper than paying international rates.
Oh, Ting.com has this.
That is your Wi-Fi. And I haven't, a lot of them, some of them you can change the SIM cards and some of them you can't. So, and they're usually not that expensive. But the main thing is that I just turn that on, I pair it up, and then I'm using, then I can make phone calls, using any Wi-Fi service and surf it. But, getting one of those when you go traveling, I do a lot of that out of country, it really saves you, hundreds of dollars, sometimes thousands of dollars.
Hey, Mike Elgin, how do you like the skeuomorphic design of this backdrop on this close-up shot? Isn't that, it looks like real wood.
That's amazing.
That's realism.
Anyway, so
these are great. Everybody should have them.
I want you to have them.
Yeah, MiFis. How about in Greece? What's your experience in Greece? Are you able to buy SIMs and things like that to put in your iPhone? What do you do there, Mike?
I haven't started yet. I've been here less than a week, and I've been too lazy to go investigate it. But yeah, that's basically the plan. And I need to be grilling everybody. But nowadays, I'm what I understand is that's really what you do. You go get a SIM card. You negotiate for a good rate, and take it from there.
Sarah Lane had great results in England. There's a company called Three that has 15 euros, I think, for a month of unlimited data. Unlimited data, yeah. So absolutely, and she put that in her iPhone, and she has phone. Now, the problem is you lose your U.S. number, but you can always forward that to
Another trick is if you have a Google Voice number, as I do, I'm actually getting Google Voice calls, which I didn't expect when I'm on a Wi-Fi network.
I had read
that you can't do that.
Yeah.
That what you can do is you can get voicemail and you can do texting via Google Voice, but not receive calls. But I'm receiving calls.
Cool.
And you can associate also your Google Voice number with Skype. So that's one of the advantages of using Google Voice. That same number applies when you're traveling.
Yeah. I forgot to do that when I was in Australia. I didn't
save you a lot of money
with my Google Voice. Well, the other thing is that my in Australia they have a phone that is not. It's like 2G. It's like a cheap little phone, but it's $1 a call to the United States.
Oh,
no matter
for a minute
up to 10 hours.
But
I saved like a lot. Yeah, it was like. The Vodacom. I just walked up in the airport and bought it. And I said, well, how much is the international rate? And she said, you should use this for your international calls.
$1.
$1 for how long?
An Australian dollar to boot.
Yeah, no. It's $1.
The question I want to ask is that if you were to wire in an acoustic coupler and use that to do a dial up into America online, could you get like 10 hours, like all day of internet access at like 1200 baud?
I bet you could, but I don't know if you'd want to. I mean,
I'll see if there's an instructables about that. For $1 for like 18 hours of international of data access, you can't beat that.
I am 1200 baud. I'm so going to test that. I am so going to test that next
picture
time.
To Tumblr.
Yeah. I am.
Whenever I travel in my briefcase, I keep a 300 baud coupler. You never know.
That's actually, I really want to.
Also,
I
have an uncle who used to work for Boston Edison. He let me have his climbing spurs when he was retired, so I can patch you into pretty much anywhere you want, anywhere in the world.
If you've got a pole, I can climb it.
Anyway,
moving along. So there was our iOS tip. By the way, Andy, already on Twitter, they're going crazy. Ray says, that is the tip of the year. Whoa, doing this now. Thank you, Andy. The tip of the year.
Wow.
I live to serve. the thing is, I deserve no thanks because I know no other way to be charitable and giving with my knowledge.
You're very zen, Nanatko.
Thank you.
Yes, he's a zen master. Mr. Miyagi of this show. Let us get our picks of the week. Mike Elgin, do you want to do a pick? I know you're in Greece.
I do.
Yeah, okay.
I have a wonderful thing from Europe, sort of. It's from the UK. It's an app called Chirp. Mm. And I recommend that everybody download it as I blather about it. It's a five-person company called Animal Systems. And they have a delightful way to transfer data. And they do it by sound. And it sounds like
birds. I read
like
about
birds.
This. It sounds like birds.
Let me show you what it sounds like. So this is a picture of a dog. And if there were other Chirp users in the room, I would simply push this button. I don't know if you heard that. And the sound would actually convey the link.
Wait a minute. Let's try it. Do I need to have Chirp running on my phone for that to work?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So let's all install. Everybody at home, I'm going to give you a moment to install Chirp. Let's see if we can all.
So this is like an audio QR code, right?
This is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an audio QR code.
I think what you're trying to do is try to make sure that this app is not downloadable by anybody across the entire planet.
We're going to bring that. No, Apple's got servers. They got servers. Let's see it.
While you download it, I'm going to
get a picture that you want to send everybody in the Mac.
Wait, which company? Which
I do. I have a
Chirp.io.
Picture.
Chirp.io.
Right?
It's a yellow icon, looks like a little bird with a dot V dot on the icon, cuz there's a bunch of Chirp apps. So I'm going to launch Chirp right now. I got Chirp launching.
Okay.
Running. Okay. Now, everybody run your Chirp. Turn up the studio sound really loud. So what's that? Go away.
Just leave it there. It's like Twitter. It gives you a social stream.
Oh, it's hearing. Go ahead. See, it's hearing it. That sounded like R2-D2. Look, I'm getting the picture. It worked. I got a dog all the way from Greece.
That's awesome.
This is probably the first international Chirp.
That is so cool. So it's the audio that does it. All right, now, everybody, I'm going to Chirp that to you. Let's hand off the dog. I'm going to turn on my sound, and I'll Chirp this down the microphone, and everybody can have your dog.
Hang on. Waiting.
Oh, sorry. That was an aborted Chirp.
Also, I shouldn't have talked over your Chirp. My apologies.
No, just tell us when you're ready, Andy. This is so cool!
This is going to be a transcontinental Chirp.
Okay, everybody in the studio is firing up Chirp. This is iPad 2 or just iPhone?
This is iOS.
iOS.
Okay. And it's free? So it's all iOS devices and soon on Android.
All right, you ready, Andy? Here you go. Everybody quiet in the house.
Ready to go.
And there's the dog! It went from Greece to California to Massachusetts in a matter of seconds, thanks to the R2-D2 Chirp.
That's awesome.
It's like the satellite of love.
Now, this is, I feel like Marconi for crying out loud.
That is super awesome. Cool.
If you think about it, this is actually anonymous. You can exchange data and pictures with people without ever knowing their phone number. Really? Or any of that. Nobody knows anybody's phone number. You can do it.
Did anybody in the audience get the dog? Look. They're from Germany. So that's almost like going to Germany. Wow. So it's anonymous.
Yeah, it's just the sound. If you have the sound, you get the picture or the text.
And I'm watching the chat room, and they've all over the world. They got it from.
There's no addressing of text or anything like that. You just push a button.
Where is this dog picture that we're sending to everybody in the world? Where did it come from?
That is a picture of my sister's dog, Taya, taken on the beach in Santa Barbara, California.
Taya is the Leica of the digital era. Okay, let's press. Okay, quiet one more time. The chat room. Everybody in the chat room has a picture of Taya now.
He's not the Leica. He didn't like wasn't abandoned to like suffocate in orbit. He's more like the Felix the cat, like that first televised image.
Yeah, you'll remember this day. That is wild.
Screw the moon landing. I'm not going to forget where I was. Well, I wasn't born yet, but I'm going to forget where I was when the moon.
I'm gonna chirp something. Wait a minute. What do I have? I can chirp. This could be a new feature of the show. Wow.
Our own version of Chat Roulette.
This week in Chirp.
Trust us. Just
like we're just going to sit there all day. What you should do is you should have a radio show that is just a series of chirps. And so what you do is you literally just turn open your phone and just keeps on showing you images.
So what kind of media can we send? Is it just pictures, Mike, or...
I think it's basically like Twitter. I think it's 140 characters or less in text and pictures.
On their web page, it says share photos, web pages. So I guess you could send URLs, contacts. So I could send you my contact.
Is it supposed to do more than this? I'm just stuck on the yellow screen.
I don't know. You broke it.
It's not working.
You broke your chirp, man. Settings and info, my profile. So you can create an account, but it could be nice job, Mike Ellington.
That's awesome.
Errington, whatever is your name, Elgin. I just combined Mike Elgin and Mike Errington, and I've made a new person who's a very nice a-hole.
There you go.
And you figure out which is which. Mike Elgin, very nice pick. Alex, top that.
Oh, you know, there's one that I feel like I have to.
Go ahead.
So my pick is Field Runners 2.
Oh, there's a new one? No, don't apologize. That's exciting. I love Field Runners.
I'm a little addicted to Field Runners.
You addicted me to Field Runners way back when. It's a tower defense.
Desktop tower defense. And obviously what they did is they looked at, you know, they were very successful with the first Field Runners. Mm-hmm. And they obviously had time and money to really design something great. And so they did. So it is,
the first one was free, right? So this is $2.99.
It's $2.99. You know, it's $2.99. It's $2.99.
Already downloaded.
It's worth every penny. So
already
the maps, there was a handful of maps and they were kind of modal, and now there's really a guide, and they're, the graphics are so much nicer.
We crashed the Chirp server. Animation. That's what happened.
Oh, that's
we. Sorry, everybody at home. That's what happened. The folks at Chirp are going crazy. Okay, so it'll come back in a second because it all goes through their server.
Right.
And so everybody in the chat room is having your experience, which is stuck at the start screen. It'll come back in a minute.
That's funny.
Hey, we're Mac Break. We ruin things for everybody.
We're aptly named.
Ruining things for everyone since 2005. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so the. But anyway, so. So Field Runners is, you know, so they have every single level is a different design with different challenges.
Same great game, but a new field.
The graphics and the animation are stunning. The third thing is you have to pull back so you can play, but you want to pull up because the new animations that they used and everything are just really, really stunning, you know. And, you know, and it's very challenging. There you go.
I love Field Runners. Same music. I like that. Because there's a certain, you want, you know, a sequel you want it to.
Well, you know, they really went through every little piece of this to design it well. And you know, a lot of the things that I was, you know, you have ways of, you can carpet bomb if you need to.
They have, what is a rewind item?
On some of them, you can load a level where you can go back three. So remember, you screwed something up, you can go back three levels.
Oh, that would be nice.
Back three turns.
Sometimes you make a mistake.
Yeah, so you can go back and draw it, and they have this viral poison that, you know, these little instructions so people get an idea of how to get started and be successful.
You're the guy who taught me the intestine defense.
Yes, it's all about the long intestine. So
forcing long march.
Get them into the chute, move them around. Anyway, then you got to get them into a kill box and you're
sick.
So,
wow.
And they did a good job of making sure that you're clear that they're all clones so you don't feel so.
See, these aren't real showing people. It's showing me the path that they'll take. That's new.
Yeah. And zoom in on it a little bit, like double. Look at how nice the little
retina baby.
But uh-oh. Also the animations, the attention to detail is just really fantastic. So anyway, you know,
this is fun.
It's awesome.
Great game.
And I think the progressive nature of it is better, so that you're much more.
They're giving away your intestines defense. Though.
I know
they're telling people.
Well, they're
how
making
to do
everybody
it.
Successful because that's. Yeah. Not, I mean, you want to be successful at the beginning, and it get. Right. I'm still at a couple levels where I can't get through it. So, so I'm. So there's a. It definitely gets a lot harder quickly.
This is fun. But, that's how a game should be. Easy to play.
But there's enough levels there that you can really, you know. Always find something that'll keep you busy.
Yeah.
And it's a great game. One of the things about it is it's not modal. I mean, it's not. A lot of times, some of these games will take a long time to play. And what's great is I'll play them for a couple minutes, and I just close it. And I come back to it.
Right. Oh, so I can pause
later.
This and
like you just close that. You can save that game. You hit pause and then close it, and then you can come back and finish the game later. And you don't really have to remember anything because it's just level to level.
Right.
You don't have to remember where you were or what you were doing before. Like you cannot pause Scramble because you can't remember what you already picked.
Fun game.
Anyway, it'll keep you busy for a long time. I apologize to everyone for
for what I just did over again.
And I just wasted a lot of your time for. But it's great on a flight back from Sydney.
Yeah. This is what you
needed. I think that was like 2 hours.
This is what you needed in a flight back from Sydney. I can tell you that right now.
When my battery ran out, I couldn't do any more work. I was like, well, I guess I have no choice but to use to play Field Runners.
Fun game. All right, Field Runners 2, $2.99, available now on the iOS store. Have you played it on the iPad? Does it have an iPad?
I don't think there's an iPad version yet.
It'd be so cool on the iPad.
You know, you'd think so, but...
You don't really need it.
The iPhone is really where you end up playing it.
Right, because you got that with you. Yep. It's noisy. You want things that blow up good. Andy Inako, your pick of the week, sir.
Really awesome GPS app that got released last week, got a lot of good press, and became, it's rare you get an app that like you've never heard about it. Then an hour later, it gets one of the coveted positions on the first page of your springboard on your iPhone.
Wow.
It's called Twist, and it's not designed to help you get to your destination. It's there to help the people who are waiting for you at your destination keep a prize of your progress. And so I set one up right behind
you. Is that kind of like Glimpse?
Reminds me of Glimpse.
But it's like Glimpse, but it prosecutes that idea so much more cleanly and so much better. All you got to do is for any trip that you make regularly or even just as a one-off, just tell the app, it's a free app, tell the app where you're going. Tell the app all the people that you'd like to keep you're meeting there that need to know like your progress, and then just simply tap that button, and that's the last thing you ever do. Because as soon as you tap, I just love the way that it's very, very smartly done. When you tap the button, it sends out text messages to everybody on that list to tell them, okay, you're going to get some messages from me. I'm the Twist server. Andy is about to leave, and he's headed for this address. But then you know how it is. Like, you get a phone call on your way out the door. You have to go right back in. So it doesn't actually send the second message with the ATA until it can tell everybody, okay, Andy is now actually in motion, and now he
needs
his
this
ETA.
App.
Right. And then I was like,
Leo still is dicking around at home.
Leo is in the front porch. Leo forgot something. He's back in his bedroom.
And then, like, the first time I used it, because I often drive, like 45 minutes away, an hour away to, like, hang out with a friend and buy comic books at the best comic book shop in New England. But then I forgot I need to get gas. So now I'm pulling over. I got a 10-minute delay as I'm gassing up. Because after the delay stretches on to 10 minutes, the app suddenly says, Andy has been delayed. Here is a new ETA. Then you hit traffic a half hour later. Andy has been further delayed. Here is his ETA. And then when you get nearby, it's like, Andy has arrived at his destination. And here is
Glimpse is cool because you can actually sit and watch as the person approaches. But that takes a lot of attention. This kind of is more friendly.
For you, the operator, you don't have to do anything.
Right.
You launch it and that's it. And then, like, it works if you're working with people who actually have the app. They have this really cool interactive app they can follow with. But even if they don't, they'll just simply get text messages that have all this information. And each text message also has this. Since maybe the server has recovered by now, we can wreck it again. Here's that screenshot behind me right now of what your recipient looks like. 3, 2, 1. And each one of these messages also has a link to a private, or at least, you know, can't be served at randomly webpage that will show them, here is exactly where you are on the map. Here are all the messages that have been sent so far. The app was smart enough to know that the Outer Limits is actually a business, so it looked up the Google Street View of that address. Also got like the Yelp reviews of it. Pulled up a phone number so that everyone that's waiting for you knows where you are, knows where everybody's going. If somebody says, hey, you know, actually, now that I think of it, I think that place is going to be closed by the time he gets here. Let's do this place again. Everybody who is on that you put on that list will share that same message. But the fact of the matter is, you press one button, you leave the house, and it just plain works. And as someone who has to at least three times go back, oh, I guess I will need the metal device that you put in the thing in the car and put a torque on it that makes the motor do the thing where the wheels... Okay, I should go back inside the house and get that thing. Yeah, I do that 3-4 times before I leave the house. So I took it out on its first real test, and that was enough to say, okay, I'm sending Twists up for every thing that I regularly go to for the groups of friends and people that I normally meet there. And I feel as though I will be scowled at a lot less when I show up there 12 minutes later than I tell them I thought I would be arriving.
Does it just expire when you reach your destination?
When you reach your destination, that's it. It's done. Or you can also manually abort. Also, I didn't mention that you don't have to be driving. It'll also work with biking, walking, and public transportation. So if your bus is like 20 minutes late, it figures out through Google what route you're going to take. It's not necessarily the most accurate map. It's as accurate as most GPS apps will pull it. I think it's getting its data from Google Maps. So whatever Google Directions thinks is going to take, that's what it's going to be. Or at least when I was testing it head to head against a couple of the navigation apps, its initial estimated time of arrival was the same as Google's estimated time of arrival. So I'm guessing that at least it's getting a lot of its information from the same places.
This is cool because I can have two different twists for walking and driving. So when I'm driving to work, I can you choose a different one than if you're walking to work, and it keeps as favorites. So that's really neat.
Right, you can get one set up. So here's my commute home. So your spouse knows when you're coming home. Right. Here's one for the monthly dinner that you have with that group of 8 or 9 friends. Here's the one for the commute to the office. It's really well thought out. It's a 1.0, so there's still some places where they can refine things. But for now, really, really nicely done. Again, I kind of rely on it already.
Very cool. That's called Twist, and I am now 3 for 3. I've downloaded Chirp. I've downloaded Field Runners 2, and I've downloaded Twist. Let's see if we can go 4 for 4. If Leo can come up with an app that everybody wants to download, it'll be a first.
I'm ready.
Are you ready? Actually, this is an old app. You probably already have it, but it saved my butt yesterday and reminded me how good it is. I think you've probably talked about this, Andy, and it's kind of related. It's called Waze, and it is a social GPS app that is not been useful to me because I don't commute, but if you commute, this is a must. So yesterday I was in Los Angeles, and I was coming home from the airport, and there was a massive traffic jam. In fact, there was a big accident. I had Waze running. Now, I have this in my iPhone on the dashboard.
What time was that?
It was about 5 o'clock last night.
Oh, okay. Because yesterday the president was here. So there was
the president. I don't know. It was something, but it said there's no movement on I-80.
Oh, yeah.
So Waze said, you know what? Don't go this way. We're going to save you time. It took me through the back streets around the traffic accident to 580, saved my butt, and I realized how great this is. Now, what Waze does is it allows you, when you're running it, to notify other people, and they have a very simple way to do it via voice so you don't have to type while you're driving, about traffic jams, police, this is probably illegal in most states, accidents, hazards, speed cameras. You can also chit-chat. You can report mass issues, map issues. This is fantastic. Now, I saved some pictures just so that you can see what it looked like because I'm just sitting here, so there's nothing.
The police button will save me a lot of blinking lights.
The police is good.
Flashing my lights.
And it actually works. As you're driving down the street, what you'll see is a thing that says, 1,000 feet ahead, there's a police. And then you can confirm it as you go by. Yeah, that was there or he wasn't there. So this was one of the things I saw. Traffic at a complete standstill on Webster Street, and then now you can tap and speak to it. So that's kind of handy. Let's see if I have some more pictures here. Police visible here. Yep. You can confirm it by doing a thumbs up. It also shows you your ETA based on traffic, how many miles I had to go and what time I should get there. I mean, this is actually easier.
I should say that I think Justin recommended it last week. The last time that I had taken a look at Waze was actually 2 years ago, and I thought it kind of stank when I checked it out 2 years ago. So based on his recommendation, I checked it out again, and that was the second thing that found its home on my homepage.
Unbelievable.
I mentioned earlier that I was doing some tests with the navigation. Waze was spot on. Every time I'm driving like a half hour to an hour, its predicted ETA is within like 1 or 2 minutes of my final landing time. But the thing is, everything that you do in Waze is crowdsourced. Not only like the location of like traffic accidents, cops, pulled over cars, things like that, but also the map info. So I really wanted, I have it on my to-do list to do a blog post of the 5 things that really impressed the hell out of me when I was starting to use Waze. One of them was on Sunday, went out to dinner, so got myself the lavish freelancer dinner of a Chipotle burrito. I mean, go back to my car, press the button, say, okay, guide me home, magic voice. It didn't just say, okay, go on to Route 1, take Route 1 all the way down to this. It's because it uses crowdsourced information, and there are 20 million people who've downloaded this app. Many people apparently have navigated their way out of this Chipotle parking lot before, because it actually sent me, now go past the Chipotle, yes, take a left by the dumpster, yes, take another left for the exit. Because normally, like, it will just leave you high and dry, saying, "I know that you're in a mall parking lot. We're not going to give you any help whatsoever on how to get back to Route 1 from this parking lot. But Waze will be able to tell you exactly. Nope. If you go past the dumpster, you've gone too far."
Now, you probably want to have this on your dashboard, as I did with the Rock Form, and plugged in to power the phone, because I'm sure it's using, you know, it stays on all the time.
All the time, right?
But, boy, blew me away just because it's crowdsourcing. This is an amazing example of where crowdsourcing in real time.
I'm not used to things like this actually working, yeah, where the voice says, you know, caution, a disabled car coming up on side of road. And as soon as, like, you know, and like 5 seconds later, oh, there's the disabled car by the side of the road that it told me that I was going to encounter sometime in the next 15
It told
seconds.
Me there was going to be roadkill ahead. Yep. And there was, and it was great. I got dinner. It was fantastic. No, I'm just kidding. No, but literally, he says roadkill ahead. I said, what?
Roadkill ahead, and there's a barbecue around the corner.
I have run into so much crap on the highway, mostly falling off of Gardner trucks, you know.
There was a pizza in Mountain View last year.
This is going to save me so much money, and it's amazing that how well it works. I didn't realize Justin recommended this last week.
I think that was Justin's.
Where was I? I don't know. And maybe I thought, oh, I should try this. So here I will. Okay, fire up Chirp, everybody. I'm gonna chirp you the screenshot.
Wait, hold on,
everybody. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I hear all these bings in the audience. That is so great.
Dear Twit, thank you for recommending our app. Please stop recommending it live on the air.
You are loving us to death.
So Waze is, I apologize. I didn't realize we talked about it last week. But
you're loving us the way that Glenn Close loved Michael Douglas in that movie. We don't like that very much.
By the way, the other thing that's great about Waze is Android or iPhone, and I've run it on both, and it works great on both. It is a very interesting application.
That's great.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Chirp. Is their server down again?
It worked for me.
Good. They fired up some servers, I think. This is awesome. This is really great. What a great recommendation. Thank you, Mike Elgin. It's great to have you from the Peloponnese.
Great to be here from the Peloponnese.
And a little plug, that's the boom mic that he's wearing. And sure, it sounds fine in your kitchen, but when you were out at the cafe, it was flawless. There was no background noise at all.
Yeah, it was amazing. The only problem with that was the Wi-Fi connection. But yeah, this microphone is just a miracle, and I really, really thank this show and Alex for recommending it.
I use it a lot for the reason I got it was actually not do anything other than when I go to conventions or conferences, I'm at the expo floor, and I wanted to use my iPhone to take it and talk, and it was always too loud, and I didn't want to hold an SM58 up or whatever, and so I bought it just for that, and it's great.
Well, during the keynotes at Google I/O, I was doing live Hangouts on air.
Right. Wow.
With this thing, so that their stage was, you know, going on and people were jumping out of blimps and all this kind of stuff. And I had a hangout with my own opinions and nobody could hear the stage. They couldn't hear the crowd, nothing.
Yeah. So it's theboom.com. And which model are you using?
It's Model E.
The Boom Model E. And they've been around for a while. In fact, I think Dick DiBartolo told me about the Boom first. There's the one you're using, the Boom E. Cool. Thank you, Mike, for that as well. And we'll have you back soon. It's great to have you on from Greece. Enjoy your new life. Damn you.
I shall.
Thanks to Alex Lindsay for being here. You're off to DC, Houston. Maybe back next week.
No, I'll be back.
That'd be great.
All right. I only have a couple of days.
All right. Well, it's good to have you in studio. Pixelcore.com for more information about his work. Elgin.com for Mike, of course, and that's his Google Plus as well as his page. And you see him on The Cult of Mac and many other places. Andy Inoko is at the Chicago Sun-Times in his big review of mountain lion will emerge when mountain lion does.
Indubitably so.
Thank you, sir. It's great to have you. Thank you all for joining us. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on the Twit Network. You can always get the on-demand version. We make it available shortly after the show at twit.tv/MBW for Mac Break Weekly. We do now three shows about Apple products. We have this show. We have iPad Today, which is every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. And now a new show, which I invite you to watch, called i5 for the iPhone. Sarah Lane, that's a quickie with five tips or apps every single week. Our first episode was yesterday, and it's great if you want to see it. In fact, she talks about the three SIM card that she got in Great Britain for £15 with unlimited data on that show. That's twit.tv/i5 if you want to see that show. But you should subscribe to all three shows in iTunes, and then everybody will be happy and no one will have to get hurt. Thank you. Thank you. That wasn't a threat. That was, you know, describing.
Watch all our shows and everyone will be safe and sound. Don't worry about your children. We'll make sure they're well looked after. We've got a man watching them right now, as a matter of fact.
Thank you all for joining us. Now get back to work. Break time is over.